Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Now, we're going to be talking about tradition and craft, heritage, and all the things that come out of it, especially in a time when the conversation is decidedly on the side of science and technology and Industry 4.0, going back to something that's organic and natural and historical in our context. And to help me in this discussion, I have the founder of the crafts community, Tanoti. It's from Sarawak, based in Sarawak, Jacqueline Fong. Thank you so much for joining me. This is a little kind of a corporate book that explains the history of what you do and what Tanoti does. But can we start with you first? Because I know that you have history in sort of an investment banking was your background, and you're an urban person. You're not actually from rural Sarawak. You're from Kuching. So how did you get into this, and what's driven the passion for reviving these traditional arts and crafts?
Yes, Sharad, I was very much into my investment banking life, and it was a fantastic corporate life. But what got me back to craft and into Sarawak was perhaps motivated initially by a sense of urgency to rescue a workshop, but then thereafter and a growing awareness that Sarawak is so colourful. We have more than 40 ethnic groups, and each group having its own architecture, food, costume, motifs, fabric, you know, and nobody was there to harness it, you know, harness all this energy and bring it to market. So I thought, well, interesting.
So you were feeling, you jumped in there. I want to ask you about this this rescuing of a workshop.
Yes.
And there's a bit of a prehistory. So Tanoti has, as it were, a predecessor. It came from somewhere, and I believe it's Yayasan Tuanku Nur Zahira.
Yes.
So tell us that story. Tell us what happened.
Her Royal Highness Tuanku Nur Zahira, she had a vision to contemporize Songket, and that vision she manifested into her brand, which is Royal Terengganu Songket, and also a couple of workshops, one in Terengganu and one in Kuching. And it was fantastic at that time. The workshop was producing amazing things, young girls were getting trained, and then when she was no longer the Queen of Malaysia, the foundation did not have a mandate generally to support a Kuching-based workshop. So it was a pity that you know, a small group of highly skilled weavers were going to have to disperse. So
right. And that's where you came in. So
yeah.
The Yayasan, I believe, started in 2008, and then because Tanoti is some kind of emerges in 2012, right?
Yes.
So and you had a partner in sort of putting this together. And tell
yes.
us about that.
So my partner at that time, who approached me, was the consultant for the Yayasan, and she had approached me, you know, with the opportunity to take this over, and we did in a sense that the girls continued weaving under a new umbrella called Tanoti, and we continued from there.
Right. So this is Dr. Jun Ngo.
Yes.
Right. And so when you came in and you had this desire, I mean, did you have the skills though? I mean, here you are, you know, making decisions about where people should put their money and grow their capital and such and such. But did you know enough about traditional songket, about weaving, about looms, about the communities from which they emerge in order to kind of lead this effort?
In a word, no.
Okay. But that didn't stop you.
But the concepts are the same. If you're in banking and you have people who have money and people who have no money, the bankers just package it into loans or fixed deposits and then do some sort of rebranding and then market them and then make a commission or, you know, a profit. And the same goes with what we do now. You know, we transfer that context. We are getting people with skills and intermediating between them and the people with money and who appreciate the skills. It's the same.
Okay.
Repackaging, branding, marketing, syndicating.
Okay, so the question, of course, often when we talk about the traditional arts and crafts, is that many of them have died. They've died because they're no longer the practitioners, or even if they are practitioners, they no longer have a market, and partly because they and their products have no relevance for modern life or for the market, right? So how do you address that? I mean, how do you think it's best addressed? Is it best addressed by getting a sponsor that can ignore the market, still have things produced? Or is it best by making those objects relevant for contemporary markets?
The idea is to keep them relevant. But who are we if we don't try to tell the market what they need next? So we try to tell them that what is progressive is your most primitive instincts. So people will understand that the manufactured product is no longer trendy. You know, what is trendy now is something that is natural, organic, handmade, tactile. So that's the story.
Right. So you're working with a tradition that perhaps, you know, flies in the face of modern notions of how things should be produced, which is fast, efficient, economies of scale, and if you can, sell it to the world regardless, right? I mean, that's the logic of modern capitalism, right? So in many ways, what you represent, what Tanoti represents, and the weavers represent, is a very different logic. How do you square the two when everything, in some ways, militates against the survival of something like what you do?
The world has its own consciousness nowadays. So everybody is coming out with new narratives. We just need to make sure that there's enough people who appreciate our narrative to help us sustain or survive and help the artisans sustain and survive.
Right, okay. And so when you took over in 2012, there was already a group of weavers.
Yes.
And do they all want to stay? And how did you convince them to, you know, then impart their skills? I mean, what do you stand now as in terms of community? How many weavers work for you? And what are they getting paid? And so on and so forth.
You know, when you're young, the world is your oyster. You don't need to weave, you know. A weaver at Tanoti has options. You know, she's in her 20s or her early 30s or in her late teens. And she has the opportunity to find jobs, any job other than this. So how do I make this weaver stay? We have to continue to make this profession sexy for them. I think that's very important. The profession has to be interesting enough that they will stay and they will develop a certain pride for what they do, which they can't if they were a waitress or clerk, you know. And that's our only hope. If they stay, then good, you know. We've done our job.
And how many have stayed? And how far bigger have you grown?
Of the core 11, about eight.
Weavers.
Are still with us. Eight of the core 11 that we took over in 2012. How we did it, you know, we would basically expose them. We will apply for awards for them. So we have weavers who are now young masters under the World Craft Council. We will get them to make speeches. Hopefully, one day, they'll make a TEDx, but we don't know. We would be able to bring them out to exhibitions and then show them off as product of people who support craft.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Wow, Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Jacqueline Fong. She is the person behind Tanoti, which is a crafts community based in Sarawak, and they produce these fabulous fabrics. Through the magic of television, they have miraculously appeared on the table. And so it's a chance for us to actually see the thing. And I know you do more than textiles with Tanoti, but let's talk about the textiles because they seem to be quite central to the work and to the story so far. What is it that we're looking at actually here?
You're looking at the contemporization of songket. The fact that songket is now interesting and trendy and applicable to a larger market.
Right. So songket, as I understand it, it's sort of associated with the Malay community. Is that how we see it? I mean, in terms of Sarawak's sort of ethnic fabric, is it Malay communities that essentially were the bearers of this particular technology and craft?
Yes. Songket in the Malay Peninsula are actually applicable to the Malay community.
Right. Yeah. And in around Southeast Asia, we have all kinds of textile traditions, including ikat, for instance.
Yes.
What is it that songket is? I mean, I actually don't know the technicalities of it. Or how do you distinguish between songket and, say, ikat and such?
It's all about the pattern. So let's say you want to create a pattern, and what goes on in your head is how you make this pattern. Ikat means tie. So an ikat weaver will tie the pattern, dye it, tie again if they want a more complicated pattern, dye, and they repeat the process until they get the pattern that they want on a warp. And then they'll start weaving a plain weave. So that's ikat. The pattern has been tied. In songket, while you're weaving, you introduce a new thread to create the pattern. So songket is a supplementary weave. Yeah.
Okay.
And then bate is when you have wax resist printing to make the pattern. So every time you look at the fabric, you look at the pattern, and then you will see how the pattern was executed, and then you define the fabric.
Okay. Why has it, and correct me if I'm wrong, all these arts been essentially seen as women's work? Why is it women's work?
Because they're the best people.
To do this kind of work? I mean, what is it? Because there's so many elements that you already mentioned. The conceptualization of the design obviously happens in the mind before it hits the loom,
yes,
right? And so on and so forth. The meticulous, repetitive almost nature of the work, right?
Mm.
So what is it that, and you know, what is it about the work that it makes it, you know, women's work? And have men tried to come into this field?
Very rarely in Malaysia, but you see men weaving in many places elsewhere. You see them weaving in India, in Indonesia, in Bangladesh. So there are male weavers. It's also a mystery to me why women weave in Malaysia only. Perhaps women are confined to the home and then they weave while their men are breadwinners. Or perhaps women want everyone in the family to look good, so they weave. But in the tribal sense, women weave ritual cloths to instigate their men to war.
Yeah, tell us more about that, because that's a fascinating story. I mean,
yes,
the ritual nature of the craft and the meanings associated with the actual product, right? So the object has ritual value or power, as some people might call it.
Yes. This in Sarawak is called the Pua Kumbu, and the Pua Kumbu is actually a cover cloth or a blanket. And you would cover a baby when it's born, you would cover the close to the entrance of the house, you will have a cloth to protect the family within the house. Or when men go head hunting and then the severed heads, before they enter the longhouse, they have to be wrapped in a certain Pua Kumbu. So a cloth is woven for the purpose that you wish for it to be applied.
This is not an example of Puakumbu.
No, these are Songket. Puakumbu is Ikat.
I see. Okay.
Yes.
And is there a dialogue between the different textile weaving traditions within Sarawak? Do they borrow motifs from each other? Are there innovations when it comes to technology?
Not yet. We have tried. We have tried. So this pattern actually is the Cendrawasih, which is the bird of paradise, and this pattern is usually represented in batik. So we have experimented this in Songket, but in the traditional sense, there's very little cross-fertilization.
And why is that?
No one thought about it, I think. No one bothered to intermarry and then decided to.
Would intermarriage be the way to do it? to encourage cross-fertilization or intercultural dialogue?
Possibly, but you know, you marry someone of a different race, you have a ceremony of their race and a ceremony of yours, and then you never had a merged.
Okay. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad. With me, Jacqueline Fong from Tanoti in Kuching, Sarawak. You have actually a shop in Kuala Lumpur, I believe.
Yes.
What's it?
It's at GMBB Mall on GMBB. The first floor.
Ah, okay, so GMBB Mall, not far from Asrawani. So it's something I go and visit, I guess, after this show. What's next for traditional crafts, and especially weaving and songket? For you, what's the next step, as it were?
The next step is to be able to brand it properly, you know, to be able to give more visibility to traditional craft. Not only by product, but by product service. Whether we can be able to engage craft audiences in different levels. Such as what happened 2 weeks ago. We were in Edinburgh Fringe, and we engaged them in the performing arts level. And you know, whether we can go further. We have already penetrated fashion, interior design, art. You know, how do we project art, project craft across different spectrums.
Are you emulating others in this endeavor? I mean, are you kind of pioneering in bringing crafts into all these different fields, or are you actually emulating or modeling yourself on the successes of other groups?
I don't know. Perhaps I'm also inspired by my own dreams. Maybe I'm also dream weaving. But I don't know. You know, every day I wake up, there is a challenge. How do we make more money for the artisan? How do we get more yield out of her one unit of resource? And then we think out of the box all the time. We have to.
And these artisans you work with, are they themselves coming to the fore as leaders? Are they starting to work with you in terms of conceptualizing how to go forward?
I dare not say that, you know, they would have the capacity. I personally don't have the capacity, and until the opportunity sort of presents itself, then we think about it. So it has to be a very dynamic engagement with them to challenge them and ourselves on how to bring you know, the industry further.
What are you up against? I mean, are you up against stereotypes or general sense of irrelevance, or this is old fashioned and therefore not sexy, and so on and so forth? What are you up against?
Time.
Explain. Why time?
We have so many things we want to do and not enough time. So, and we have so many people we want to help, but we have no time to help them individually. So time, I think. time is the most scarce resource in what we want to do.
Is this largely led by yourself or your and stakeholders within the community? Do you get government help? Is government, oh, does it have any role to play in the development of the traditional crafts?
Various parties within the government would definitely, you know, I would definitely pay tribute to them. The State Tourism Board had funded the entire exercise at the Edinburgh Fringe. Martrade had funded our little foray to Paris Fashion Week. And, you know, in certain types of marketing activities were supported by the government. But whether our business is supported by the government, no.
Right. I mean, in fact, you have won several awards. The World Crafts Council Award for Excellence in Handicraft in 2014, 2016.
Yes.
Is winning awards important for the visibility of the craft?
Of course. It endorses our work. And we are now known as high quality craft producer worldwide. And we are purist. We would not get a World Craft Council Award if we were not purist to our techniques and our craft.
Right, and that's important for being taken up by others in other fields. I mean, how exactly in practical ways, apart from that plaque on the wall or that, you know, certificate, what does it actually do for the crafts? Do you get people knocking on your door saying, I would like to buy, you know, 200 meters worth of Songket from you now that we've read about you in a magazine?
Of course we get that, and we are grateful for that, and that's the reason why we win awards, so that people will appreciate that our craft is of a certain quality. Yeah, we do that, but it has to mean more, you know. It has to motivate our artisans to produce higher quality craft. Rather than cut corners, you know, and it motivates them to have pride in their work.
Right. Mm. I understand your partner, with whom you started this whole enterprise in 2012, she's moved to Australia, Dr. June Ngo.
Yes.
So is it become a quite lonely enterprise for you, Jacqueline? And are you looking for collaborators in your future ventures?
For sure. We look for collaborators all the time. Yeah.
And what kind of collaborators are you looking for?
Any collaborator in fashion, in advocacy, in business, in finance. You know, it's important that we have like-minded people within our community to be able to help us in the cause.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just to kind of confess a little, we both met at the Maybank Women Eco Weavers meets Southeast Asian Artists exhibition in Singapore recently. Those kinds of efforts, do you see that as being valuable? And also, I think the MOU that was signed in sort of developing curatorial research into textile weaving, I mean, is that something that you think is ultimately going to benefit the industry?
Extremely, extremely. It has so much to play. Maybank is a massive organization, and the fact that they have an awareness that weaving is something that needs to be supported is amazing to us, and to be able to be a part of the Maybank family is an invaluable experience, and they could be catalyzing so many other thought leaders to follow the narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's been fascinating. I'm going to take this book away with me and maybe grab one of these pieces of cloth very surreptitiously. I've been speaking to Jacqueline Fong from Tanoti in Sarawak. We've been talking about crafts and weaving, livelihoods, and also the future. All here on Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan, only for Astro Wani.
Thank you, Sharad.
Thank you so much.